Hi everyone, my name is Yarrow and you're listening to the Embodied Business Podcast. It's a late Monday morning and I'm sitting at my dinner table with some really delicious biscuit tea, and I'm excited to talk about making work work for our neurodivergent brains today. This is something I talked about with one of my clients last week, and it was really interesting to ask myself, what kind of advice would I actually give? You know, what have I learned about my own brain and how I can work my work both more sustainable, but also more pleasurable and creative and joyful, and therefore better for my clients. Just a few announcements. My back to school sale has now ended. Thank you so much to everyone who supported my work. I deeply, deeply appreciate that. I'm still open for web design and tech support bookings for autumn and winter, and you can reach out to me or book a free feeler call through my website if you're interested. And I'm also in the process of moving my newsletter to Substack, so that is pretty exciting. I'll say more about why I'm doing that and what to expect there in the next newsletter. But I think after over a year of deliberation, to be honest, and going back and forth, I feel that my concerns are being outweighed by the fact that Substack is technically and learning style-wise more accessible than my previous MailerLite newsletter. I'm excited to, for example, to read my newsletter out loud for people who would prefer to listen rather than read. And I'm also really excited to create a bit of an archive of my newsletters, because I want to share more exciting thoughts, resources, observations, and I would love for people to be able to go back into the archive through time and read up on those older posts. So there's that. You can still join that, of course, if you like, on my website, and I'll link to that in the show notes. All right, so making work work for our neurodivergent brains. What does that even mean? I know many people listening to this podcast are really questioning the way that they work. Maybe you have employment, but it doesn't feel quite right. It's not quite working for you. Maybe you have your business as a side hustle. Maybe you're working in your business most of the time. I like to avoid saying full time because I think it's such a weird measure of time. Like, what does that even mean? You know, I like to think of the fullness I feel in my capacity rather than a 40-hour work week. But anyway, you know, you could be in any of those situations and still feel that, you know, maybe it could be easier on you, it could be better in some way, maybe more effective for what you're trying to do. I personally really like the word efficient. I know not everyone relates to it. I think that there can be beauty in efficiency, and I think efficiency doesn't always have to be aimed at extracting as much labor as possible. I think to me, efficiency is more about really honoring the resources I have and making the most of them and keeping them kind of related to the outcome that I desire and the change that I want to make. All right. So I want to begin with a bunch of questions that I'm always asking myself when I'm thinking about making my work work for me. And then I'll tell you in four different areas how I've changed things to become better for me. The first question I like to ask myself is, to what extent am I identified with my work and productivity? Because in theory, I've for a very long time, or even all my adult life, or for as long as I've been working, and I started working when I was 11, so that was a long time ago, I've always, in theory, agreed that, you know, humans are, of course, valuable and beautiful regardless of how much or how little or if anything, you know, they produce. But it's one thing to say that on paper, and it's a whole other thing to really kind of be honest with yourself about your capacity, your desires, your dreams for your work, and work in alignment with them, and to let go of any shame or doubt you have about your worth as a person related to that. So I think for me, it feels helpful occasionally just to ask myself, you know, in what ways am I identified with my work and my productivity right now? Where is the frustration coming up sometimes? Maybe there's areas where I feel like, gosh, I've been meaning to do this thing for a long time. It still hasn't happened. I've been meaning to rewrite my rituals book, for example, and I recently started doing that and it's fun, but I'm not currently able to make as much time for it as I would ideally like. Just pointing my dog to a tree so he knows it's okay. So yeah, that's interesting to me. And I think I enjoy and prefer kind of being honest about that. I seek those conversations with my friends. I tell them, you know, like, this is what's coming up for me around identification at the moment. And I find these conversations to be really kind of productive and interesting and illuminating to both of us usually. The next question I really like to ask myself is, what is enough income and stability? And that also kind of is its own really beautiful, never-ending journey, because I think the narrative in capitalism that more is always better and we should always seek to accumulate as much wealth as possible, work more, get more done, put more out in our work. It's just so big, right? So it's, I think to me, it's just not enough to say I'm resisting that or I'm questioning that. I want to do that differently. I really need to frequently ask myself, what does that look like? And how can I embody the sense of enoughness in my life? For me, that has a lot to do with housing. I've talked about that quite a bit. I live in this little one bedroom flat, which I dearly, dearly love. I'm constantly learning more about DIY and how I can make it even more beautiful. And since I moved in here, it really has changed and transformed so much to suit my taste, my preferences, my body, the way I like to host people in my space, the way I like to work, and so forth. And that's a real joy to me. And I'm really also trying to lean into the sense of enoughness around that, because I don't really desire to live in a big house. I don't really desire to have a car. And so sometimes that is really almost, you know, like, there needs to be some effort put into that, because again, the narrative is so big. It would be so easy to be like, well, you know, I'm living in this flat now, like, what's next? What am I working towards? And instead, I think I'm really curious about resting in this place and making it the best it can be, and really even maybe dreaming about growing old in this place, like really, really old, and wondering, like, what could come out creatively of this deep intimacy with place, where I know every inch of this little flat and the house it's in and my little front garden. And I want to, you know, really explore the poetry of that instead of chasing the next best big thing. But it could, of course, show up in different ways for you. Like, maybe it's more about income, or income goals, or a follower count, or your newsletter. And I want to be clear, obviously, I'm not questioning or criticizing people having goals and aspirations and wanting growth, because there are often times in life where growth is really beautiful and necessary and joyous. I'm just saying that there's always more room for us to be really intentional with that, and to kind of accept that growth is not always where it's at. Sometimes stagnation is a good thing, and sometimes we have to let things die back in order to regrow in a sustainable and regenerative way. So back to the question, like, what is enough income and stability? I would encourage you just to ask yourself that, maybe write about it, maybe make an Excel sheet, really track your income and spending, and think about what is enough, and really allow yourself to claim and define that in some way. The next question I like to ask myself is, what are my flow states? So in what aspects or in what aspects of my work, or what times of the week, or in what kind of settings and constellations am I feeling this really deep, beautiful, joyous sense of creative flow? And then I can explore, you know, where is it coming from? How can I have more of that? Because I know that this is such a big part of what makes work sustainable for my neurodivergent brain. I need these periods of time where I feel just at peace, you know, just not very anxious, kind of in a flow, creatively expressed. And I really want to give that to myself, whatever it takes, you know, within reason, of course. Okay, so those are the three questions I really asked myself. I'll repeat them. So the first one was, to what extent am I identified with my work and productivity? The second one is, what is enough income and stability? And the third one is, what are my flow states and how can I have more of them? And now I'm going to share four different areas that I've looked at this past year in particular to kind of make things more comfortable. The first thing is building those flow states up. So I'm doing that by really paying attention to them. As I just mentioned, I'm exploring them. I'm paying attention to them with a lot of love, and I'm removing obstacles to them as well. So to give you an example, I really love sewing. It's not really related to my work, but I know that when I sew and I make a garment for myself, I enter this really peaceful flow state, and it can be really helpful in resetting my brain after a stressful work week. So, you know, I might do that on a Friday and then really have this sense of like, oh, I've done something creative for myself. I feel more replenished and I'm much better able to return to my work on the Monday. And an obstacle that I needed to remove for myself is on a Friday, you know, like coming to the end of my work week, closing my computer and then feeling like, oh my God, there's no way I can now also take the sewing machine out, find the right thread the machine, find the right fabric, decide on a pattern, you know, all those little steps. So I've now kind of reshuffled my living room / dining room to allow me to have the sewing machine always out. That doesn't mean I use it every week, but I really love, you know, I love it visually. It's beautiful. And I also just love walking past it all the time on my way to the kitchen. And it's just this tiny reminder that even if I'm stressed about other stuff, I'm still a creative person. And it's really easy to get to my sewing machine once I have time. And that feels like I'm removing an obstacle to being in that kind of flow state. And then the last thing is that I really celebrate them when they happen. So I'm really unpacking any guilt or shame or feeling of like wasting time that might come up when I'm doing something that allows me to be in a flow state. And I also celebrate that I'm often reaching flow states in my paid work because I found something that I love doing so much that is really sustainable to me and that feels meaningful to offer to my clients. And so I really don't take that for granted because I've done a lot of shitty jobs in my life. And I say shitty in that I feel the working conditions were not great. I didn't feel respected or valued. I wasn't paid in a way that felt respectful to me. And so there might have been meaning in the work in that I was still able to bring joy to people in some way, but it felt crap on my end. So, you know, experience something really different here now in my late 30s and having done that for over 8 years, I feel so grateful. And I really, you know, want to remind myself of that. I write about it. I tell my friends. I just appreciate it so much. And it allows me also to pay more attention to those flow states. The next area that really has helped me kind of understand my neurodivergent brain and making work better is to have clearer boundaries, of course. I talked about them a lot, but specifically today I want to talk about how they relate to how my brain works. So I used to have calls often scheduled back to back in my afternoon. I often would offer a tech support to people. So, I mean, I still do that, but I do it differently now, and that's really important to me. I used to sell packages of 5 or 10 or 20 hours of tech support. And then I would often have calls with people in the late afternoon because that's the overlap I have with my clients in the US and Canada. And if someone needed me, then I would have, let's say, like an hour-long call at 4, an hour-long call at 5, and then another one at 6. So literally there were some days where I'd be in a client call for 3 hours back to back in totally different projects. And I would spend at least an hour before those calls preparing each of them so that I could really quickly toggle between my notes and kind of feel present in the moment. And I can't tell you what a huge strain that was on my capacity to do anything else with my life at the end of that day. So I'd finish at 7 and I could barely make food. You know, it took me a really long time to feel ready for sleep, even though I was really deeply tired. I just needed a lot of time to scroll on my phone or go for a walk or, you know, just kind of have a shower or kind of settle down. And I really don't do that anymore. That is not sustainable for me. And so I've cut my calls back to be 45 hours at most. And I find that actually to be really helpful. And so far, I didn't have any negative feedback from my clients. My sense is that a lot of the time, even if there's complexity, 45 minutes are actually enough to cover as much ground as two people can, or three or four, whatever, can reasonably take in at any point in time. And if there's more to discuss, then we'll have another call, or we'll arrange things via email, and that seems fine to me as well. Now, it's not a super hard rule. I would say that this is totally fine for about 90% of my calls. And there might be the odd occasion where someone is like, hey, I really feel like, you know, before we move forward, I need to talk about this other thing. Do you have another 20 minutes or so? That is totally fine. But just having this default rule of a 45-minute call that people can book into my calendar, it feels so helpful for me. I also think that if other people have, you know, a habit where they book back to back, it gives them those extra 15 minutes to prepare for the next call, and they're usually really grateful for that. So I think it's a win-win for everyone involved, really. And it sounds like such a small thing, but it's incredibly helpful for me. The next thing I like to do in terms of boundaries is to have at least one non-verbal day a month. I use my voice a lot in my work, for example, by podcasting, but also by recording screen share videos for people, being interviewed by other people, you know, all kinds of ways. And I love talking in some ways, but I also really love the sound of silence so much. And I'm really noticing that now that I give myself at least one day per month, usually spontaneous, where I switch my phone off, I don't take calls, I don't reply to emails, I don't talk to a single person except grunting at my dogs. I just feel so much more replenished. It's really, really good for me. I come back the next day feeling so excited to talk again. And like I just had this really, really deep reset, basically. It's wonderful. And then the last thing I'll say about boundaries is that clearly laid out contracts have also really made a difference for me, because I used to feel quite a bit of anxiety around navigating tricky situations with clients. For example, deadlines that have been missed where someone has booked a web design with me, but they haven't been able to prepare the content, for example, or images are missing, or they haven't got a hosting account yet, or maybe I start working on something and then the client isn't yet able to give me feedback. Now, again, obviously that can absolutely happen. I'm always happy to hear, you know, request for an extension or just a check-in on where someone is at, and then we can talk about it. But in the way that my contracts are laid out now, in the way that I communicate with people leading up to a project, I'm just so much clearer about what I need to do a really good job. And I also explain what the benefit to them is. You know, for example, if you have your copy ready before I start working on the site, then you get pages designed where the layout really fits what you want to say. And we can really have a think about where to draw attention, you know, what to highlight, what you want people to do next. And that's so beautiful for your user experience. So it's really in your own interest to prepare your content well. And I'm always happy to give feedback. Often I say to people, you know, if you send it to me the week before I need it, then I can give you some feedback and we can see how we might be able to make it better in some way. I think that those clearer boundaries are good for everyone involved, but specifically for my brain. I know now that I don't have to do all this like social second guessing of like, is this okay if I ask for this, or should I have been clearer here, or does my client actually know what I need right now? Because that is all clearly laid out and I'm so grateful. The other area I wanted to talk to is generally to better plan for my different energy levels, for what my brain needs. And I think obviously that's super different for all of us. You know, you might want to plan in a totally different way, which is okay, but I'm just sharing what I'm doing. The first thing I really like to do is think about the different seasons of the year and think really carefully about the bigger commitments I'm making. So for example, I ran the livelihood community for 4.5 years, and I would place the launches twice a year at a point in the year that I felt pretty comfortable that I would be in a good headspace to do a lot of promotion and marketing without that feeling too uncomfortable. Or when I do a live run of my classes, such as Create and Launch or the Web Design Adventure, I again really look at what is already booked. Do I need to take any time off that month or season? You know, what else is happening in my life? And so I'm not just thinking 3 months ahead, I'm thinking a whole year ahead, and I'm really aware of the seasons and how they change my capacity. I also have an Excel sheet where I look really clearly at my different income streams, and I'm asking myself again, like, what is enough? What do I really need at this point in my life? And then where is money coming from in my business at the moment? So in my case, this tax year, it would come from group classes, from the livelihood community, from my Patreon, from my web design bookings, and from my tech support that I offer. And so I can see, okay, you know, this is the percentage in which those different income streams have come together. But I can also ask myself, what have they cost me in terms of energy and mental capacity and time? And that might make it clearer where there are patterns that I haven't been seeing before. So I might find out, for example, that I just have too many calls booked in the afternoons at the moment, and that's draining me in a way that's impacting the other work that I'm doing. And therefore, I want to limit kind of how much time for calls I make available in my calendar, because while that might be making me the most money, or the most, you know, the most immediate payments are coming in that way, it could possibly cost me something that I don't want to pay. And I think that's true for every single business that I've encountered. There's always some sense of surprise about where the money is coming from and what it's costing you. And I think that we can all benefit from asking that question, basically. I also really pay attention to make sure I have pauses between my bookings, especially for bigger web design projects. If anything runs over, if I just need a break, I really always give that to myself. I also have a little plan of things that I do when I feel financial anxiety. And I think it's a normal part of working for yourself, because our income fluctuates, we have goals and expectations, we also have needs, and sometimes things do not work out exactly the way I had hoped. That might be a client paying late, or it might be a booking falling through, or it might just be like a quiet season. And what I find really helpful for my brain, my mental health, is to have a plan in place for what I do when that happens. So I have a list of kind of behind the scenes admin projects, for example, one of them being that I want to move to Substack. And whenever I find myself with free time and this kind of feeling of like, oh, I don't know exactly what's next. Like, am I booked enough? You know, is this okay? I know I have something really meaningful to do that makes me feel more empowered, because I'm doing something towards my goals, even if I don't currently have a booking or there's a bit of a gap in my calendar or something. And then finally, I'm really clearly communicating what I'm planning to my community. So for example, the back to school sale I run every September, I start talking about in July and August. And so that means that I'm not the only one who knows what to expect. My community also knows what to expect from me. And that feels really soothing, because I'm not building up these unrealistic expectations about being a superhuman. I've never promised there to be weekly podcast episodes on here, for example, but I'm offering you what I can. And that feels really good and sustainable to me. And then the last area is really embracing imperfection, because I think that is, you know, like the need to be perfect is probably one of the things that can trip our brains up the most. It's so pervasive. It's just everywhere you look. Social media has obviously played a part in that, but I really want to think about my own kind of consistency, for example. What I mean by that is that I've been podcasting over 7 years with so much joy and commitment, but I've never had weekly episodes for a long time, because that's not sustainable to me. I've allowed myself, you know, to work a little bit more towards my own rhythm there, but I also have the self-trust that I always return to my podcast and that I never drop it completely. And you know, I think we're all different in that sense. Some of us will need weekly episodes to feel like, yes, I'm really in a flow here. I'm committed. I am consistently showing up. I just need to know that I'm committed to this practice, you know, for years and years to come, maybe even decades. And then I can hold kind of the rhythm a little bit more loosely in a way that works for me. And I think the other piece to embracing imperfection is just to be really transparent about mistakes and uncertainty. So I will say happily, for example, that I don't really know where the emergence of artificial intelligence is going to bring web design. And I don't think any one of us can know that right now, right? But I've recorded an episode this summer where I explored the subject of like, what does AI mean for small businesses? And people really like to listen to it. But I didn't in any way position myself as an expert or make any solid predictions because I just know my limitations. And I know that the best I can do at this point is like contribute my thoughts in a really imperfect way. And then people can make with that what they want. And that feels really good to me. So I think in online marketing, there is sometimes the invitation or a trend to really position yourself as an expert as at all costs, where you, really, really kind of articulate that you have some kind of knowledge that very few people have, or even maybe only you have. And if your clients pay you to share that with you, then you can really change your life, their life. And in some ways that maybe is true. Obviously we do all have knowledge that we can share in exciting ways and that can really help people. But for me, that's just not a primary angle with which I position myself, if that makes sense. And those are my thoughts. So I talked about really building up the sense of having flow states in my week. I was talking about clearer boundaries, better planning, and embracing imperfection. And those things, together with the questions I asked in the beginning, really have helped me make work for myself. So I hope listening has been helpful for you as well, that maybe you had some ideas for changes that you can make. And if you have any feedback or questions, I would love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening.